So, I'm so happy to see many of you here. Last time I gave a talk about happiness formula, and I found out most people from Buddhist Society of Victoria were missing because my talk coincided with a meeting. So I kind of thought that they missed a lot because they were not there. So out of compassion, I want to give a similar talk. Same, but different. I'm going to talk about happiness and the way to happiness so that most people, those who missed, they can at least get it. I can see you must have missed. So, anyway, I don't care repeating the same talk because the Buddha taught for 45 years, repeating the same thing. He taught four things: suffering, the cause of suffering, happiness, and the way to happiness. Can you imagine spending 45 years talking about four things but in a different way? So, anyway, I'm going to give a talk, not for 45 years, but the second time. Happiness. What's happiness? The Pali word for happiness is sukha. Sound like sugar. Happiness, the word is sukha. The Pali word is dukkha, but the Pali word is very interesting, dukkha. If you want to translate the word dukkha into English, guess what? You'll have more dukkha. Any attempt to translate the word dukkha in English, you're in for more unsatisfactoriness because there's simply no equivalent word in English for the word dukkha. People said stress, suffering, but suffering is part of dukkha. So it's just a small portion when you talk about the usual suffering we talk about and happiness, that's actually part of the word. So the word is comprehensive, and I would like to give you an image of that word because that's part of the Four Noble Truths. And in Buddhism, in order to really cultivate happiness, it's good to have an understanding of the word dukkha. What does it stand for? Here's some interesting Sanskrit word, which is ka, part of dukkha. Ka is the axle hole of the wheel, the axle hole of the wheel. That you get the image of the wheel, and it has the axle hole. And dus means difficult or badness. So this image then evokes something that is in disharmony. You see, when the hole is the axe is not fitting in its hole, what will happen? A little bit of disharmony. So if you look at where they got this image in ancient India, they had even in Sri Lanka, they have these animals carrying heavy luggage on a wheel which is not computerized balance. It's actually out of harmony, and then the road is not straight like in Australia. Sometimes the bumper roads, and now the axle is not fitting in its hole. So in short, it's a bumper road, it's a bumper ride. One time I was in Burma, and it was a long distance, and they told me, okay, please come on board. There was a horse, and it was carrying its cart, and then four monks were sitting there. I sat there, but because of the road was bumpy and it was going like this, and the animals was pulling this cart, and it's very heavy. At some stage I said, no, I'm going to go off the board. I just left the thing and just walked because I knew it was suffering, right? So life is sometimes like that. There's some kind of disharmony in life, And if there's no friction and the disharmony, which is the opposite of harmony, then you know that at least there's some happiness. So in other words, when there's harmony in your life, when there's no friction, there's a sense of well-being, and then there's happiness there. Now, the sukha is happiness, we know that. So now, I would like to bring you to something very interesting. Chinese saying. This is a Chinese proverb of how to be happy. Those who are from China, you must have heard about it. Raise your hand if you know Chinese. Ah, you're Chinese. Okay. I know Ni Hao Ma. Anyway, there's a proverb here, a very, very beautiful proverb in Chinese. If you want to be happy for 1 hour, take a nap. Right? Yeah, take a nap and you'll be happy for only 1 hour. If you want to be happy for 1 day, go fishing. Not very Buddhist. Anyway, go fishing. I want to make it Buddhist, but anyway, think about it so that we can come up with something. Go meditate. Okay, let's say. Okay, if you want to go to be happy for 1 hour, go and do what? Meditate. Especially on loving kindness, may I be well up and peaceful, may I be healthy, and may I be helpful. Alright, if you want to get to be happy for 1 month, get married. Ah, that's very interesting. If you want to be happy for 1 month, do what? Get married. Bad news. Usually we don't get married for one month only. We get married for the entire life. Here's good news. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, get married every 1 month. Not to a different person, of course. To the same person. So how many months in a year? 12 months. So it's very easy. Make 12 weddings in a year. So that means at the end of the month, within the first day of the month, go to the same place where you had the honeymoon, and then you can get married again. And you keep on rejuvenating your happiness. And they say you can go for, they say honeymoon, this time you go for honey stars. And then you go to honey sun. Be creative. You don't have to make a honeymoon all the time. Right? You go and then renew. Of course, you don't have to make very expensive weddings. Eh? You just go in a field, actually, a big field, and very keep it simple. You call a friend, and then you get married. No need to buy new rings and all that. So this is what I would do, actually, if I wasn't a monk. I just actually, since to be happy for 1 month, get married, I would get married 12 times a year. And then another year, so if I live 50 years, that's how I'd work on my happiness. Okay, if you want to be happy for 1 year, any health a fortune, right? Any health a fortune, right? A lot of money. Right? So after 1 year, I think you'd be unhappy. After eating all the same food again, and traveling the same planes all over, I think you'd be unhappy according to Chinese tradition. Now, if you want to be happy for the entire life, no, for a lifetime, I think according to Chinese, they just mentioned about one lifetime, help someone. Is it not amazing? Just only one life, lifetime, help others. I was walking someplace, there's a small town, just there on the street there. There's a caption there on the top of the building which say, it's a pharmacy which is healthy, happy, and helpful. So now I thought when I go back to meditate again, practicing metta loving kindness, I'll just use that as a part of my phrase. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be helpful. Because when you help others, you become happy. As a monk, I try to help others. You know how I help others? I don't eat in the evening. So can you imagine all the meals I've saved for others? Eh? I am a monk like 13 years as a monk. That means 13 years I've saved the evening meal for others. I'm not going to be happy. There's a meal here. You're going to have this meal fundraising. Monks will not be there, and nuns. So we are going to serve that meal. But don't get offended if you don't say monk there. Actually, somebody recently asked me, are you going to be there for the dinner? It's a fundraising dinner. I said, monks, we don't do meals in the evening. So you serve and help others. Now let us put it in a Buddhist sense now. If you want to be happy for the rest of your entire lives, because in Buddhism we don't live only one life, what do you do? All your life, attain Nibbana. That's the ultimate happiness. I'm making it now from Chinese to a Buddhist proverb. If you want to be happy here and now, what should you do? According to the Buddha, he said that if you want to be happy here now, attain deep states of concentration called jhana. It's called pleasant abiding here and now. You can do that. And in fact, last time when I was talking about the happiness formula, we talked about the four kinds of happiness that we found in deep concentration. The first happiness was happiness due to seclusion from mental defilements, from unwholesome states of mind. And the second happiness in deep concentration, it's happiness due to concentration. And then the third happiness was happiness due to purity, to equanimity and mindfulness. And then the fourth jhana was happiness due to purity of mindfulness and equanimity. So this is all about happiness. Now, happiness formula. The formula that we came up with before I release the formula. If you are not there, please don't release it. Let us first look at the myth about happiness. There are four myths that are found, the myth about happiness. Money, material things brings happiness. That's a myth. As I told you last time, that if money and all material things that brings happiness, monks will be the most unhappy people. But on contrary, I found out that I think they found out the happiest person was a monk somewhere. You look at this, only one, one robe. As a layman, I used to have 20 shirts, actually. I remember when I was in boarding school, I had 20 shirts. Was I happy? Not really. Now I have one robe. I'm very happy. I don't have to worry so much about the style. In Uganda, I have to work on my fashion, you know. Sometimes I dress like this and sometimes full robe. And Ugandans say, wow, I like your fashion. It's so easy to select on what you are going to put on. Like me, I would be late actually for the Dharma talk if I have to think about, like, I have 10 robes to choose from. Can you imagine coming here halfway the talk, you know, like after 30 minutes after? I'll have a problem. Shoes, you know, I've been to America where I went to a house where somebody had 40 pair of shoes, and this was the wife. I didn't look at the closet for the man. And there are two daughters, but it's very, very clear how difficult to choose from. You'll be very unhappy. The very thing that you bought to be happy, they make you unhappy. In fact, now they say there's a problem in the West regarding choice. Whether you're going to eat Blue Band, whether you're going to put olive oil spread or margarine and all these things. Very easy for us. Very easy, right? Choice can be a big problem. Now, this is a myth. Of course, money and material things can help you, but that's not the end all, right? That's not the final goal, that once you get all your money and material things, you'll be happy. It's a big myth, and it came to clear when I was in Uganda. I was in Uganda a couple of years ago, and we had a problem with the internet, and we wanted to get some internet connection. I went to the place to where to get internet connection, and then I met the person, the saleswoman. Then say, wow, you have a good laptop. And then, as before we actually continue talking, and she asked me, "What are you? You look smart. This, I like your clothes. I like it." And then she asked me, "What are you?" I said, "I'm a monk." "Oh, what do you teach?" I said, "We teach suffering, cause of suffering, happiness, and the way to happiness." Then this lady told me, "Are you suffering?" I said, "Yes, I'm suffering. That's why I came here to fix my internet." I said, "No, you are not suffering. Your laptop is so good. Where did you buy it?" I said, "In the United States. I was given this laptop when I was shot. Actually, I was given a gift, a laptop. When I was shot at. When I went to USA, they gave me a gift of surviving a bullet. So, anyway, it's a good laptop, actually. So I didn't buy it. So now, he said, "Wow, this, you are very, very happy you have this laptop. You're not suffering." I said, "I'm suffering." Then anyway, we opened the laptop, fixed the internet. I showed the temple. I said, "Wow, you're a very good monk. You didn't eat the money they give you to donate to you. You used it for building the temple. It's so beautiful." Then she told me that I'm not suffering because the temple is so beautiful. I said, "You don't know. I have to maintain the temple." Maintaining the temple is a headache, actually. Everything's breaking, it's leaking here and there. Okay, it looks very good in the picture, but you go there. You have to maintain this and that, you know. I didn't say, "Where do you live?" I said, "Sometime in USA." "So you live in USA? You are the happiest people. Where's the dollars? You have a lot of dollars and money. Give me some money." So you see, many, many people, I think I've seen many people, 90% of people I've met, they think that actually to be happy, you must have a good car, good house, all these things. But actually, real happiness comes from inside. I'm not saying that this thing don't bring happiness. They bring happiness when you already have the structure, when you have the willingness, and when you have the humility, when you have the wisdom and understanding to use them, right? Most people get money, sometimes they misuse it and they become even unhappy. So I'm not saying that money, good house, good relationship, good children, they don't bring happiness, but actually they just serve the purpose. They all these things are in service to serve us to the path to happiness. But if we take them and we isolate, we say, okay, these are the things that only bring happiness, and we ignore other things, then we are going to be unhappy. A big house is going to be a monument. Yes. Your relationship are not going to be very happy if you feel that's the only way. We have to understand relationship and bring spirituality and other things that we are going to mention, and the Dhamma, actually. When we have Dhamma there in everything, whether it's money, relationship, everything, then we're cultivating happiness. But money and material things without Dhamma, then it's going to not going to bring happiness. So there's a big myth here. Happy people have no problem. Do you think I'm a happy person? What do you think? Am I a happy person? What do you think? You see, yes? Do I have problems?
Yes.
Yes! Most people think that when you're happy, you go hee hee all the time. Every time. No. I have some time when I cannot smile. Especially when I miss a plane and I don't have meals. Then the hormones kicks in. I've spent in the airport 12 hours. People in Thailand, I spent 12 hours in the airport. Somebody dropped the ball, as we say in America. Dropped the ball and they forgot to pick me up. Sometimes incidents happen. People drop me at the airport and go back, only to find out they have canceled the flight. Then I have to stay 7 hours in the airport. Am I always in a smile when I'm hungry? No, of course. But you can actually turn these events into happy moments. Saying that, okay, many people are not eating in Africa. Many people, in fact, in Africa, they don't have clean water. In fact, there's a, I met a guy from Newbury. He's the one who's constructing. He had an accident 4 years ago, and he's very, very happy. I was wondering why he was very happy. He told me, Bante, every moment in my life, I take it seriously because I nearly died. He showed me the picture. But among other people, he's the one who was cracking jokes. I mean, he showed me he nearly died. And then this guy told me that he's happy and his son is not very happy. He always asking in the fridge is missing this, in the refrigerator they are missing this. He told me what he did. He got a picture from Africa where people didn't have clean water and were drinking water from a footprint of the camel where they can only get water, and they do like this. You remember last time when I was giving a talk, the best way to drink water is just to kneel on your four legs and then with your mouth. That's how they drink water. And then ever since he put this caption from Africa, where kids are drinking water from the footprint, the kid, his son, never complained about things they don't have in the fridge. You see, what happens in life, I think, is that we always complain about things we don't have, and we forget what we have. The son, he has a fridge full of food, but there's only one thing missing, and he was complaining and whining. So this is very interesting. This guy is very interesting. He's called Scott, actually. His life is very tough. I mean, if you look at what he went through, but he's always very happy, having a sense of humor. So anyway, happy people have problems, but they don't make problem get in the way of their happiness. Yeah, they have unhappy moments. So that's a big myth also that I want to dispel. Seas like oceans have waves. You cannot cut waves from the ocean. So problems is part of life. So to be happy, you don't have to cut all the problems out. Have the best girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, best meal, best car, Jaguar, whatever it is, having the best teacher. All those are actually part of life. Meeting a very difficult boss is part of life. It doesn't have to stop you from happiness. Be happy. And maybe the boss will change if you're happy. Chances are the boss is going to change, yeah, right? Be happy, that's the idea. Right, there's a big myth here, the third one. The third one is there is a secret to happiness. I will tell you, it's a big myth that there's a secret to happiness. There's only one secret I found out. You know what? There's no secret to happiness. That's the only one. The secret of happiness, that there's no secret. That's what it is. So don't wait for a magic formula. And somebody, you have to go to Himalaya, or you have to get the best monk to give you this formula, that the right one, so that you start to be happy. There's no secret. That's it. Even the happiness formula, the Noble Eightfold Path, is not a secret. It's there for you. Then there is another one. It's very common in a Judeo-Christian. I was born as a Roman Catholic. You have to first suffer in order to enjoy happiness. That's a big one. First, you have to suffer. In order to appreciate happiness, first suffer. Something happened to me when I was teaching in Mississippi. There was a guy who was a Southern Baptist. I was teaching about happiness. He told me, Bante, there's no way how we are going to experience happiness without suffering. That's why Jesus suffered for us, and we have to suffer in order to experience happiness. How are we going to experience happiness if we don't suffer? Now, I told him, I'm going to give you a ticket to go to Caribbean. It's very warm. It's a cruise boat. You're going to enjoy sunshine, warm coconut, unwatura, eh? Kurumba watura, eh? coconut. You are going to enjoy, but don't go. First go to Alaska. It's not there. Spend 1 month enjoying your snow. When you come back, I'll give you a ticket to go to. He said, would you do that? I told him, I asked him, would you do that? Or are you going to take my ticket, cruise boat, go to Caribbean? He's the same guy who told me, Venerable, I don't want to go to Alaska. I'm not going to go to Alaska to first surf about the cold weather and in order to enjoy the weather in Caribbean. So, but there's a tendency I've seen many times, people think that actually to really enjoy happiness, let us first experience suffering. So it's a big myth out there actually. So now having told you the myth, so let's go to really what's the Buddha's approach to happiness. The Buddha's approach to happiness. I think when we look at the Noble Eightfold Path, when the Buddha talks about the cessation of suffering, he used the word Nirodha. Nirodha. Nirodha Satcha. The Pali word Nirodha means, Rodha means prison. And Ni means not. So not prison. So anytime you are not in a prison, in a confinement, you are experiencing happiness. This happens from moment to moment. There's what we call tadanga. Tadanga means moment to moment. Moment to moment, no prison. So in other words, happiness, we may not get it in a big chunk, right? But moment to moment, we can experience those moments of happiness, right? Those moments when we are not holding on, when we are letting go, right? When we renouncing, when you are helping others. You see, helping others comes when you are not holding on the things you have. Eh? When you are having compassion, that's part of right thought, compassion. Eh? That's metta, loving kindness. To help others, you must have loving kindness. You must have compassion. But these are mind states that comes from moment to moment. So we can actually experience happiness moment to moment. There's also temporary happiness. Temporary happiness. And we can experience it when we are meditating, when we are practicing mindfulness or breathing. Take a deep breath, all of you. I want you to take a deep breath. And then release it. Deep breath. And then release it. And then a deep, slow breath. In breath. And then release it. Now you're going to take another breath. Hold it. Take a deep breath and hold it. Hold it. Hold it. Hold it. And then breathe out. Now I'm going to ask you, did you experience some sense of release? You hold your breath and you're holding on tightly, and then once you release, then you feel real ease. So every moment we are breathing, we actually tapping into those moments of happiness, right? We are holding on to the breath to keep alive, to survive. In other words, we are craving for the breath. We are craving for oxygen. Every cell in our body craves for existence. So we always grab another breath. And then once we release, when you feel that moment of moment-to-moment happiness. That shows that it gives you a sample what will happen when you completely let go. If you can let go this moment of the breath and relax, and you feel very relaxed and ease and happy, that shows you that actually, ultimately, when you let go, you'll also feel happy. All right, so we came up with a few formulas. Some people came with acronym. Acronym is HOME for happiness. We had the workshop here where we actually discussed a lot. And I like HOME. Home means healthy for H, O, openness. M standard for meditation or mindfulness, and enjoy. So you can use this one for cultivating moments of happiness. But putting it in a Buddhist context, the formula of happiness is actually the recipe of right understanding, right thoughts, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, right? So those are the eight parts that if you want to be happy, we have to cultivate those. These states of mind, because all these are states of mind. But most of them are formulated in negative statements that we don't know that they're actually the recipe for happiness. Because we don't have enough time, I would like to group this into what we call the three trainings: Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Sila is the way to happiness. Many, many times I meet people. They say, oh, you monks, you keep 227 precepts. You're very unhappy. And then they even accuse us that, you know, the Buddha talked about reaching so on, not to attach to rites and rituals. You monks, you attach to your rules. You're not going to gain enlightenment. Anyway, put it aside. When you look at the monks' rules they keep, 227, people say, where is this Noble Eightfold Path? Show me in a Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path talks about right speech, eh? And right action. And that's the path to reaching final enlightenment. Where are the 227 rules? So you monks, you are not getting it. But I found out the more rules you keep, the more you become happy. But of course, you don't have to keep all those rules. Five is minimum. But when you look at the Buddha's teaching on how to be happy, he mentioned it clearly in the Anguttara Nikaya. In Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha said that if you keep these five precepts, you are doing what we call, you are practicing generosity, what you call Mahadana. Mahadana means a great gift. You are giving a great gift to all beings. You are helping others, in other words. How are you helping others? You are giving freedom. Freedom from fear. Freedom from danger. I can build monasteries throughout Africa, but I don't know whether I can protect the entire world like when you practice five precepts. Because when you practice five precepts, you're actually protecting all beings. You are not. You are giving the gift of fearlessness. That means you are not killing. You are not taking what's not given, right? And so on. Can you imagine to be in a place where you expect that everything will be stolen, including your shoes? Actually, when you go to place, I went to Nauyana. One day I woke up, there was no shoes. I had beacon stock. I said, this is a monastery. This is one of the best monasteries in Sri Lanka. Come on, where's my shoes? And they're very expensive shoes. Birkenstock is made from German. Very expensive. I count my shoes. Monks? Are they taking my shoes? No, cannot. No way. They gave me the best kuti, actually. The best kuti. And I left the shoes behind. I didn't know there are dogs there. I looked around, around, and around. I couldn't see my shoes. I found them very, very far from my room. But dogs might take shoes, but you know you can be in a countries where actually you leave the shoes behind, eh? Then you can't find them. You go to the supermarket. You go to the supermarket and you leave your Birkenstock behind, your shoes. Are you going to find them? Not really. Depends on, of course, which country you are. So here we are here. We don't have to worry that our shoes are going to be taken. Is it not the greatest blessing? There's a great gift. But more so, the Buddha said when you keep the five precepts, you gain these mental states one by one, and they condition each other. Like for instance, when you keep the five precepts, which is covers the noble eightfold path of right speech, right action, and right livelihood, is that you actually free from remorse. Freedom from remorse is a bonus. Freedom from remorse brings happiness, right? That's the first mental state you gain, freedom from remorse. When you have freedom from remorse, then what's gonna follow that is actually pamoja, which is gladness. You feel very glad that I'm actually protecting life. I'm speaking the truth, I'm protecting the truth, I'm honest. What comes after that is joy, pity, joy. Another mental state that most people confuse with happiness. Actually, joy, and the Pali word is pity, is different from sukha. There's a sutta that helps us to make a distinction. The simile they give there is like walking in a desert, and then you're thirsty. You want water to drink, but you can't find it. And all of a sudden, you find an oasis. And you know that, oh, a few meters, there's going to be some water for me to drink. When you see the oasis, then actually what happens is joy. Not happiness yet. So once you go there, drink water, thirst goes, you take shower, you bathe, and then you are cool, you sit under the tree, and you are refreshed. That's a mental state which is in Buddhism they call happiness, sukha. It's contented with what you have got, with what you get. So now, another definition that you can see that happiness comes from contentment with what you have. If you don't what you have, if you don't like what you have, forget about happiness. Whether it's your kids, whether it's your house, whether it's your, it doesn't matter. Find a way how you can forge a relationship with your books. I like my books, actually. Actually, if there's anything I love, is books. Dharma books. Another books. So you have to really find out. You go today, if you don't like your garden, you say, my garden, I love you. If you don't like your wife, you say, my life, I love you, and I'm going to remarry you on 1st July. You're going to see a difference in the dynamics in a house. There's anticipation, there's joy. Anticipation, there's joy, and there's happiness. Anyway, this is not talk about only married people. If you're not married, welcome to the club. Monks, how do we get happiness? How do we get happiness? We don't eat dinner, we don't watch TV. We are helping others, you know? I have a joy that I'm going to give this Dharma talk. I'm helping others to be happy. That's giving more happiness, right? And then after here, I'm going to Sri Lanka. After that, I'm going. So there's a lot of joy, you know, anticipating to make a difference in people's life. So it feeds into the system. When you're helping people, it feeds into the system. Right? Now, mental state, joy. From joy, we attain another mental state, which is very interesting. What we call pasadi, which means calm and tranquility. And then from that, we gain what we call sukha, happiness. Those are mental states that if you actually free from remorse, you don't have to wish, oh, may I have joy. It just comes naturally, organically. So the key is to find out how you're going to reflect on your ethical conduct, moral conduct, sila, and then see how you're going to be free from remorse. I told you last time that you don't have to think about the entire life. You go through the moral inventory of all your life when you are in England, when you are in Sri Lanka, when you actually told a fib, where you actually you did this. No. Reduce it to one day. Reduce it to 1 hour, 30 minutes. You can say, okay, the last 10 minutes you have kept the 5 precepts because you took the 5 precepts here. Don't think about before you came here, or last year, or yesterday, what you did and what you said to your husband. Eh? Go to hell with baskets and come with bags. Don't think about what you said yesterday or during breakfast. Think about now. When you do that in even last minute, last moment, last second, that's called sila nusati, reflection on your ethical conduct. That brings freedom from remorse, and from freedom remorse to joy, to gladness, to joy, to calmness, to tranquility, to happiness. And then, if you want to be fast, to go a little bit further from happiness, because that's just a bonus, you can actually gain concentration, because the Buddha said, a happy mind gains concentration. Those who want to meditate and gain concentration, you better see how you're going to be happy. Figure out how you're going to be happy, either through metta loving kindness, when you breathe in, breathing in happiness, breathing out happiness, and then try to find, see how you get happy. Once you really get happy, concentration is just a natural result of being happy. If you, let's say, donate food here, like you're going to donate food here, then when you come to meditate, think about, oh, I've donated food to these people, all other people, and monks and nuns, they are happy. Oh, they are happy. Look at their faces enjoying their food, and then see them as happy beings. This practice is in Burma. When I was in Burma, people donate food to us in the monastery, and then we eat when they're looking at us like this. Very weird for Westerners. Westerners, they don't like it, but I like it very much, because they cultivate what you call appreciative joy. Mudita, appreciative joy. Most people, when they invite me to their houses, then in the evening, they told me, oh, sorry, Venerable, we are going to have food, and you can eat in the evening, but we are going to eat. So then they don't want to eat when I'm around, because they feel they're offending me. I said, no problem, eat, and I want to be there. And look at you, eating and eating. And when I look at you, I'm going to enjoy. Don't deprive me of happiness. When I see you eating and you're happy, I'm happy. You're happy, I'm happy, we're both happy. That's how Buddhist teaching is. Not only one person getting happy, everyone. We generate happiness, very easy to generate happiness. So from, of course, as it goes from concentration, the Buddha said that a concentrated mind sees things as they really are. A concentrated mind sees things as they really are. So if you want to see things as they really are and gain wisdom, the Pali word is called Yata Bhuta Jnana Dasana, which means seeing things as they really are or how they become. So if you want to gain wisdom, try to gain concentration. Again, if you have concentration, you don't have to wish, oh, am I going to see things as they really are? Because your mind is calm. You can see things clearly. You can see the breath clearly. Before you are fighting and wrestling with your breath, who is going to win? I want to see this breath from beginning to the end. But now when you are concentrated, you breathe well and peacefully, and it's very easy to see the breath. Further within your practice, you can gain even further mental states, which you call nibbida, which means disenchantment, and then there's viraga, which is not gluing, which means dispassion, and all the way to vimutti, which is final happiness. That's the way to happiness. It happens all the time with all other factors of the Noble Eightfold Path. I'm just going to summarize the rest. Concentration, which is what we call concentration group. It has what we call right mindfulness, it has right effort, and it's right concentration. Though that what we call concentration group, again, it's the same thing. When your mind concentrated, it's free from mental defilement. Freedom from mental defilement will mean that you are going to be glad. Even if a small moment, when you are free, even a small moment, temporary, of mental defilement, what will happen is freedom from mental defilement, then gladness, as I told you, blah, 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 until vimutti. Then, what happened to right understanding and right thought? thoughts of generosity, thoughts of loving kindness, thoughts of appreciative joy. This is also bringing happiness, right? Thought of generosity, you get happy. When you get, can you imagine when you are generous, you become happy? Can you imagine? There is, I told you last time, this is what we call a paradox, Venom paradox. Venom paradox. Venom is actually come from a snake. When it, the snake, like taipan, actually it's called taipan, actually, injects you the venom, you can die. But it's very interesting, the doctors, that's why even they use the snake. When you look at the sign for doctors, it's a snake like this. Yes, yes, it's a snake. So the venom, it's the same venom that actually when you extract carefully and keep in a fridge and add a few things there, then it can cure. It can cure, eh? When you are bitten by a snake, it can cure you from the snake bite. So it's amazing that when you are generous, some people think that they are going to lose and they are going to be deprived and they are going to be unhappy. But it's the same generosity, actually, when you practice generosity with mindfulness, it actually heals you from attachment. You are free from attachment and then you are going to be happy. So it serves both ways. You actually gain happiness while overcoming the mental defilement of attachment. As I told you last time, is that these days, when I cannot see my thing, either the umbrella or gloves, I don't mourn, I don't grieve. Eh? I just wish that those people may enjoy my umbrella. Recently, when I was doing a presentation last time, we could not see my thumb drive. We looked for thumb drive. Again, I didn't say, I think that it was stolen. I knew that it's somewhere. So I just said, wow, that's wonderful. May somebody who gets my thumb drive by mistake enjoy it. But as soon as I let go like this, my friend told me it's here. So in other words, let go is very helpful. When we let go, for some reason there's letting be, and there's a freedom in that. Next time when you don't find something, where you forget your wallet in a post office and you can't see it, don't cry. So may people enjoy my credit card. Maybe somehow it's gonna appear. Anyway, this is the message. Even when you cry, what can crying bring your credit card? You might as well be happy, isn't it? So in other words, don't lose your mind. This is a message. Whether it's a relationship, whether it's a situation in life, whatever it comes in life, don't lose your happiness. It's very valuable. Try to cultivate happiness irrespective of external conditions in life. Okay, again, with the right understanding, right thoughts. When you have right understanding, right thought, there's freedom also from mental defilement. In fact, regarding right understanding, when you have right understanding that there's a way out of this suffering, this is in the scriptures. When we have right understanding that there's an exit in this mess, in this life, we are not doomed to suffer. Even when people make us suffer, all these people that we meet and situation in life, when they make it suffer. But when we understand, with not with the emotion commotion, but deep understanding, mindfulness, with mindfulness and equanimity, there is an exit. And exit is called sadda in Sanskrit, and sadda in Pali, which means faith and confidence. Once we know this, then there's faith and confidence that arises from this understanding. And then from faith and confidence, we gain what we call pamoja, gladness. From gladness, joy. You know now the trip. You know? Do you know the path now? Let us count the path. What? See? The first one is... What? Mention it. I told you the way to happiness. You are not telling me. Okay, I told you all the noble eightfold path, you have 8 times to be happy. 8 times. Each of them leads this way. This is the route. One is gladness, pamoja. Whatever you do with the noble eightfold path, that's the exit. I told you, when you are driving and you can't see the exit, and one time you see the exit, how do you feel? Yes, you feel joy that now I'm not going to dazzle fuel, I'm not going to waste time, I'm going to reach in time. All these things become clear. You become glad. When you are driving and get lost and you see the exit, you get gladness. From gladness, what do you get? Joy. From joy, what do you get? Calmness, tranquility. From tranquility, what do you get? Happiness, sukha, which is our discussion. Then from happiness, you gain concentration. From concentration, you see things as they really are. From when you see things as they really are, you do what? You become disenchanted. This is not a negative term. And then you get dispassion, and then final happiness. May you be happy and peaceful. Thank you very much. Those who missed happiness, you know how to be happy. It's known there's no pill in a pharmacy where you can get and swallow one and be happy. If you know this, what will happen? Relationships are going to make you more happy. They are going to feed into the system. Getting more money is going to make you more happy. Studying is going to make you more happy. Traveling is going to make you more happy. Thank you very much. Now we have 5-7 minutes because we end at 10:45. Who has the question about happiness? 7 minutes. Because I want to end it at 10:45. Question. Any question?
You know, there was the shooting in the U.S.
Right.
In the church.
Right.
Killed 9 people.
Right.
Gunmen.
Right.
And one of the family members.
Right.
They lost their uncle or mother.
Right.
Sister.
Right.
A lot of people might feel revenge or something. So, do you have any comments on what happened there?
I don't remember that event myself, but in general, people die. There are many causes. Many causes. So if people die like this, and we don't know all the causes, what can we do? The best way we can do is to forgive. The best way we can do from a Buddhist point of view is to forgive, right? Mandela, you know the President Mandela?
Sure.
Do you know the atrocities that happened in, do you know that he spent 28 years in a prison?
Yes.
But because of spirituality, he wasn't a Buddhist, he forgave. Reconciliation, he forgave. But if we don't practice the Dharma, what's gonna happen? We actually try to kill those people who killed other people. We try to have the grudge. This has been going on throughout history, whereby even people attack others because of the harm they have done to them. And then there's no end to wars. There's no end to conflict. Even the Buddha said, hatred never ceases by hatred. Hatred ceases by love alone. This is an eternal law. The Buddha didn't say that this is a Buddhist law. It's the way how things are. So if there's such atrocities, are we going to solve those atrocities by atrocities? I think Mahatma Gandhi is the one who said that a tooth for tooth, we practice tooth for tooth, very soon people will have no teeth. If they kill those people, 12 people, and then you go and look for their relatives and kill them, will that solve the problem? My comment is that we try to practice the Dharma because we have no clue why people... Of course, we have the clue that people are killed because of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's very clear. But there's so much mechanics behind things We cannot even say that because of their bad karma. That's another big problem people have, especially even Buddhists. They said, oh, these people kill because of their karma. Let them get on with it. So then they can't have compassion. They don't practice forgiveness. They say, oh, because they must have killed people in the past life, that's where they kill. That's not the law of karma. That's how it doesn't work that way. So the best approach is to practice the noble eightfold path. Forgiveness is in the noble eightfold path. Compassion is the noble eightfold path. Do what's humanly possible and stay with the Dharma. The best way is stay with the Dharma. Incidents happen in Africa. Myself, I was shot at. If I wasn't a monk and I wasn't a Buddhist, there was going to be a simple solution. I just needed $100, $200, and then hire a person and kill the same person who was trying to kill me. Will that solve the problem? Of course, no. So these things we have to use actually Buddhist approach. Whatever we do, we have to stay with the Dharma. The Dharma is there on our side, but the Dharma doesn't mean we become vegetables. We don't go for the action. We have to be proactive and do what's necessary to reconcile, to find a solution, how to we have to use the court system in order to bring justice. Right? This is very important. We don't say, oh, we are good Buddhists. Oh, people killed all these 12 people. We don't need to investigate. We just go and meditate. Let's meditate. No need for investigation. Those people will get their share. You know, those killed people, after that, they also get killed. That's not Buddhist way. We do what needs to be done. Does that help the person who asked the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Isn't it true that once born, one has to die in any way? Once we are born, the only way is death. The ticket, there's already, death is certain, but the way we die is different. Is that right?
Yes.
And there was one monk say, when people die in an air crash, and some people say it's collective karma.
Mm-hmm.
But some people say collective karma, but one monk say, no, it's individual karma, because the person who is practicing the Buddha's way, they will just meditate and then go. But the person who is not practitioner, they will scream and they will get fear because of the coming death.
Mm.
Is that true?
Wow. Now, you are bringing karma, that's a Dharma talk. And that's the most misunderstood teaching. I think what I can tell you, whether it's right or not, I would like to be very clear. Huh? What's karma to you? Karma, the Buddha mentioned clear, is volition. You have your volition, any action and behavior done with greed, hatred, and delusion, and its opposite, it has a potential, remember the word potential, to bring results, right? Now, most people, what I found out, at least either when they're asking question, is to mix what's karma and the result of karma. The result of karma is called vipaka, right? Maybe there's a coincidence when somebody do something like this and something like this and like this, and then you're traveling together, you have a possibility that yielding the results. But as far as the karma, it's in your mind. It's in your mind. If karma is there, it's in this box. All right? It's your mind with greed, hatred, and delusion, and this opposite, generosity, loving kindness, and delusion, that is going to prompt you to do something. Now, when you want to do something, do you say, okay, please come here? And then in other words, I cannot act on your behalf. Greed is arising in my mind, it's not in your mind. So, the karma, the Pali word karma, it means volition, it arises in your mind. I think that's what he was trying to tell, that it's actually individual because it arises in the mind. Vipaka is the result. And the result doesn't correspond, it's not always the same. That's mechanistic view. Think that, okay, if I steal a watch, and then after that, somebody's going to steal the watch. That's not how it works. It leaves a lot of room for variables, for the condition to come to be favorable. And the simile of the salt is very clear. When you have a salt in a water like this, and then when you do unwholesome, it's like water like this, it's in a cup. And if there's something, a salt drops in this one, in this water, it's going to be salty. But the same ball of salt, if it's put in a lake, is not going to be salty. So if you find out if you have done something, let's say you've stolen a walk, and then you start meditating, maybe become a monk, a nun, or you become a meditator. Then you might take a thumb drive or a watch at BSV. Nobody is going to take it to prison. But if you do the same thing, continue to be a robber and pickpocketing, and you're in Melbourne Street and you steal a watch, they'll take you to prison. You see, actually, karma allows variables. It's not mechanistic. So we cannot, and only the Buddha can tell what happened to those people in a plane that is crashed. What's their law of karma? Nobody can tell except the Buddha. In fact, the Buddha said clearly, if you are trying to figure out the results of karma, you go berserk. So I cannot say right or wrong. I'm sorry, I'm not Buddha, I'm Buddha Rakita. Leave that to the Buddha. Who is going to tell, okay, because this person actually was a pilot in a past life and crashed the plane without doing a proper license and now is crashing and all that thing. Nobody knows what all those people crush, what's happening. What we do know, using Ajahn Brahm's example, talk, he said that it's the easiest way to get a cheap funeral because you are all cremated. Cremated the instant, no funeral directors and nothing, all these things, you know. And then again, Ajahn Brahm said that for those Christians, it's very easy to go to heaven. It's closer. That much we know. The rest, we have no clue. Yeah, this collective karma and all these things, we have no clue what people did individually or separately. But what do we have, what we know though, is that actually, that people might be different. When people are traveling, they might be monks. Enlightened beings. In fact, maybe this is why they do in Thailand. In Thailand, when we are boarding aircraft, they don't allow anybody to board aircraft until the monk has boarded, or a nun. It happened recently when I was living in Thailand. I thought it's going to happen only on Thai Airways. This was Qantas, and they looked for me. I bored. Think that if a monk boards fast, it won't crash. Maybe not. Maybe. Anyway, thank you very much for your question. Time is up. Yeah, but of course, if it's an enlightened being, maybe they are not going to react the same way when the airplane is about to crash. Other people are going to react separately. Yeah. To tell the truth, if I see something going on, I told you what I do yesterday. Last time I told you, Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So by the time it touches the ground, I'm with the Buddha. That's the best we can do.